As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
And I'm Joelle Steiniger. Today we talked with Ben Leonard, the Chief Design Officer at Wunderlist. Michael, what'd you think of this one?
Oh, this was awesome. I really liked hearing about his design process, how they approach design within Wunderlist. They've always kind of been on the forefront with beautiful design. It's always been a part of their culture, you could tell, but it was interesting to hear from him what they do internally and how they approach it. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think he said something that caught me, which was they don't really compete with other software as much as they compete with pen and paper.
Yeah.
And it's just a reminder that, like, we get so caught up in the idea of apps and software and all these tools that you forget what problem you're actually trying to solve with something. And so they really go back to the root of, like, how do we make your life better and easier? And let's start with, you know, what you're doing, which is pen and paper.
It's so true. Well, let's get into it.
We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Hover makes purchasing and managing your domain simple and easy. This week, I talked to George Diab of Working On about why he uses Hover.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've been using it for a long time, probably 2012, I think. I love it. The prices are great. The interface is awesome. And I still have a few domains out in some other places, and I'm just waiting to find some time, and I'll move them all to Hover. I love it, yeah.
Go to hover.com and use the code SATISFIEDCUSTOMERS to get 10% off your domain purchase today.
Matt, tell me what comes to mind when you think about starting a new product.
Middleman, Git, Rails, Heroku, SSL, SSH, servers, clients, monitoring, logging.
Okay, wait. Hold on a sec. Like, before all that tech stuff, like, basic day one, how do you start to reach customers?
You just need a marketing site up. You need to start showing it to people.
Okay, so start from, you know, sitting down in front of your computer. You've got this idea. You want to get the marketing site up. What do you do?
First things first, you need to find a great web host. You want a host who's reliable, been around a while, and is pretty well tested. A host that's easy to work with and ideally inexpensive. HostGator is a great option for this. They fit all those criteria, plus they're offering 30% off your first invoice for all Rocketship listeners. Definitely go check them out today, and don't let something as simple as hosting slow you down from reaching your first customers. Visit hostgator.com/promo/rocketship to get your discount. CodeShip is a hosted continuous delivery service focusing on speed, security, and customizability. You can set up continuous integration in a matter of seconds and automatically deploy when your tests have passed. CodeShip supports both your GitHub and Bitbucket projects, and you can get started with CodeShip's free plan today. Should you decide to go with a premium plan, you can save 20% off of any plan for the next 3 months by using code ROCKETSHIP. Go to codeship.com/rocketship and check it out.
So Ben, for those that don't know, tell us, what is Wunderlist?
So Wunderlist is the easiest way to get stuff done across all the devices you use every day, either as an individual or teams. So we are building a productivity tool that helps you to organize and manage all the to-dos that you have in your life and collaborate with the people around projects that you're working on.
So, and for, I first discovered you guys, I guess it was 5 or 6 years ago, and it was always through being featured in either a design blog or on kind of a design site. You guys have always been kind of forward on that design. I'd love to hear a bit about the kind of how you guys prioritize design and business at goals inside of Wunderlist.
Sure. That's an interesting question. And it, to start, design and the focus on design and user experience has been part of the company DNA from day one, simply because Christian, our founder and CEO, really values it very highly, which is also the reason why we, next to a chief technology officer, we have a chief design officer that kind of explains the importance or makes the importance visible. And it also explains how we see it from a business perspective. That means that in the end, technology and design shape the product experience for the user. And ultimately, that means that both design and technology are in serving the business, so to speak. So when it comes to how we prioritize, it really always starts with understanding what is the feature that we try to build and what problem for the user do we actually try to solve. And that sounds very simple and probably like what everyone tells you when they speak about design, but we really have established, I would say, an understanding in our community, in our user base, that they feel like we listen to them. And that happens on various channels through our community support on social networks, through our email support, and also just through data that we look at that shows us the usage of the product. So that's how we start. And a second important point when we talk about design and what influences our design work is the fact that we believe that productivity software ultimately has been developed and designed the wrong way for decades almost. And that means ultimately most productivity software feels like work. And while you're doing work with it, it should not feel like work. It should actually feel like fun.
It's true.
And, exactly. And so what we try to do is we try to develop a tool that is as simple as it can be and as delightful and joyful as it can be, so that ideally people don't only use it for work only, but actually also put stuff in that they have to do in their private life. And that in the end, they enjoy using so much that it kind of covers all the areas of their life. Because then really, then finally you are more productive. Otherwise, you're just managing things, but it's not fun. You're not using it a lot. And we compare it a lot to gym memberships. You know, you have really good intentions when you start using productivity software, but usually after 2 weeks, you don't show up at the gym anymore.
Right.
And you keep on paying usually for a while just because it makes you feel better, but it doesn't mean that you're really using it.
You're really buying the opportunity to be better, but it's still up to you to do the work. Yeah.
Right. And when we look at it really from a product and business perspective, that's not what you want to build, right? You want to build something that people have an emotional connection to and something that people really actively use and that where they find use in it. And that is an emotional component, but it's also just a really functional component.
So you have a process for kind of looking at, you know, customer feedback and how people are using the app to decide on, you know, what problems you want to solve in building out new features. Do you have a process or have you done much eliminating of things that become unnecessary?
Yeah, both. So we constantly, that's part of our culture and DNA almost, we constantly in bigger iterations, we challenge what we have. And if you look back in time, and Michael, it was 4 years ago that the company came out.
Was it four? Okay.
So 4 years ago, we launched the first version, and we solved quite a number of problems with it. And then as we grew and as the user base and the usage grew, we saw that some things didn't work out the way we wanted. And especially at that point, it was the cross-platform performance. So we made a really big iteration with Wunderlist 2 where we fixed some fundamental things. And so when we look at development, then we look at both the short-term or near-term things and then also the bigger picture things that we develop. And both are based on user feedback. Let's say the near-term things are really features where people write us about, hey, I would like to create projects and not only lists. So we will try and understand what is the actual use case for that. And then we argue a lot. So usually the feedback comes in through customer support or through data we see. And then we start designing prototypes and we test them internally. We are probably also the biggest users on a bigger scale of Wunderlist. And we discuss it and we test it. And so either we say, okay, this is great, let's go and let's make this a feature. Or in a lot of cases, we also just say, nah, no, this doesn't feel right at the moment and let's just prioritize something else. Up to the point, and that goes back to your initial question, where we also remove features in these big iterations. When we see that over a longer period of time, people don't use something in the product, the feature, then we remove it. And it's a good exercise, I would say, for every team in the world to do that exercise, even if you risk that some people might complain. I think it lets you feel really where the pain of the user is. And I think a big problem when you build up legacy is really that you don't make that cut. And so that's kind of how it's almost a cultural process, and a lot of people are involved rather than just, okay, let's just cut this out. It's not that fast. It's really, we take those things very seriously.
This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
So is that more of like a gut decision and a group decision? Or do you have like some metric that you say, you know, if we can determine that like less than 10% of people are actually, you know, using this feature, then it gets cut? I mean, how do you kind of reconcile what you keep and what you don't?
Yeah, it depends a little bit on the feature itself. So let's say when a feature is more or less invisible in the UI, or something that like a shortcut brings it up and more power users use it, then the percentage of people using it can be low, but it's really useful for those. But where we are very clear is when things are visible in the UI. Like I said before, one of our principles is to keep the product as simple as possible. So we really try to optimize at that point for a bigger majority. We don't have one percentage, but we usually analyze a feature and the usage of a feature very thoroughly, and then we set a cut. So it can be for reminders, which is one thing that we're currently improving, and we're revamping the entire way how reminders work. We really want to make sure that we build something that, let's say, 2/3 of the users really feel strongly about. And it is really the top requested improvement, so we take the time and do that right.
So you guys recently kind of made a version of Wunderlist for the Apple Watch. I'd love to hear, what was that like?
So designing Wunderlist for Apple Watch was really a challenge unlike any other. Although we had developed an Android Wear companion app for our Android app before, Apple Watch really challenged the way we looked at Wunderlist and the way we develop usually for other devices. And the reason for that is mainly the use cases. We wanted to design Wunderlist for Apple Watch specifically in a way that it fits the top use cases that we see for this device. And one of that is, for example, grocery shopping. Mm. And when we look at that use case, we really want to play on the strength of the device. So you have your hands free finally. You don't have to stare at your phone all the time and then with the other hand try to get something out of the shelf or push the shopping cart or do all of this in parallel. No, you just have everything right there on your wrist and you just get a glimpse and then you know, okay, the milk and you check it off. And on the other hand, we think that in business, it's also extremely helpful to get an idea of what's up for today or get a reminder of your next deadline or your next meeting or simply quickly accept a shared list invitation. So when we designed for Apple Watch, we tried to not do everything that you can do on the phone, but actually do a few things really well. And just to kind of sum it up, we see two big UI and UX patterns evolve on the watch. And one is hyper-relevant notifications. Okay. The great thing about the watch is that it knows where you are and it also knows in which context you are. So instead of just pushing every single type of notification that arrives on your phone, we believe that we should really limit the amount of notifications to the most important ones in this moment, at this time, and make it really useful. And the second thing that kind of goes hand in hand is we really think that the UI part will almost evolve into an invisible UI. We would like for you to interact as little as possible actively with Wunderlist on the watch. So you get a reminder and that's it. You know, you get a little tap on your wrist and that's it. If you want to add something to your grocery list, that's great. Just tap one button, speak what you want to add, and that's it. Mm. Or when you look at the glances that Apple Watch offers, you don't even have to open Wunderlist to see what's up for today. And that's kind of how we approached the design for Wunderlist on the Apple Watch.
Interesting. Were you able to use like location data to see, because you're talking about context, to see kind of where they are, or you know, what was, how do you get that context in the kind of the watch UI?
Yeah. So, you can use location services, that, I mean, right now the, Watch app is a companion to your iPhone. I personally believe that for wearables in general, this will change in the future. Okay. And they get more independent. But so you can use location data from the phone to actually determine where someone is. And the interesting part will be to then connect that information to actually use cases. So I know that you're close to the supermarket, and I should actually bring up the shopping list.
Mm. That's really cool. Yeah.
Now, if you could only get down to like what aisle you're on and what items you need from that aisle.
Yeah, I mean, when you surf the web, I think there are some patents that got granted to some of the big tech companies that probably make that possible fairly quickly or fairly soon.
Wow. Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, it would be exciting.
So, kind of, you mentioned the business and the personal side and how you guys are tackling both. I'd love to hear kind of how that evolved. When did you guys introduce the Wunderlist Pro version? Was that from the beginning?
No. When Wunderlist launched initially, we launched a free version because we wanted as many people as possible, obviously, to use Wunderlist when you start from scratch. I would say that's the goal of everyone, to just get as many people hooked as possible. And I think our success at the beginning to reach the first million users kind of pushed us through to the point where we said, okay, now this is really useful for people. And our vision of a very simple and easy to use productivity tool is real, and people adapt it. And then we could actually follow with step two, which is obviously important when you build a startup, is the business model. So in 2013, we launched Wunderlist Pro, which gives you additional features that you need as a, let's say, more active power user that can be your really productivity geek, or you're using it a lot with your team. And then you have features such as assigning to-dos to specific people, or we remove the file limit of file uploads, things like that. So features that you would need in a more active, more collaborative environment.
So that was almost 2 years, it sounds like, before you guys launched the Pro?
That was, yes, I would say 2 years.
Yeah, from the beginning?
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. So, and did you guys use your existing customer base as kind of the early, you know, doing customer interviews and figuring out what they needed? Or was this something that you guys kind of had planned that you knew at least what V1 would look like?
So it was probably a mix of both. On the one hand, we had the idea to launch Wunderlist Pro and certain features from the beginning, and it was really a sequencing question how we go to market and how we make sure that we get a lot of people on board. Mm. And then just the prioritization, specifically at the beginning with a small team, that's what it all comes down to. But then there was also, from the beginning, I think a very engaged user base that we could count on when it came to really prioritizing. So we had a bunch of ideas and long lists of features that we would like to add or wanted to add to Wunderlist Pro. But when it came to prioritizing, it was very quickly very clear that certain features were just more necessary and more useful than others. So in the end, I think we tried to map our vision of where things would go with the requests that came from the users, because in the end, those are the people that we're building the product for.
kind of when you're building these features, I mean, you talk about having a grocery list all the way to being able to manage a to-do list for an entire organization. On the design side, how challenging is it to have to take into all of those use cases when you're building these interfaces?
Mm-hmm. I would lie if I said it was easy.
I imagine.
the easy part is that, and that's something I think that in designing business software is always forgotten or mostly forgotten, is we in the end we're designing for people.
Yeah.
And we all have the same basic needs, and we want simple, easy to use software. The part where I think the design challenge lies is how do we design the core features so that everyone is satisfied and can use it. And then as you upgrade to Pro and use Wunderlist in your company and in your organization, how do we enhance the interface in a way that it's still simple, but you also see that you have all the functionality that you're looking for. What we try to do is usually we have extensive beta phases, either closed ones or open ones, where we try to early on validate the decisions, the design decisions we have made, and also the feature decisions. And we, like I said in the beginning, we really carefully look at that feedback. So it is not easy, as it is really a lot of work and iteration. But when we look at what's happening in the enterprise software, then it kind of puts it a bit into perspective. And the thing that we see there is simply that people have better software today at home than they have at the office. Yeah. The whole trend of consumerization of the enterprise software is just a buzzword for that. And people get used to really good and easy to use software latest since the iPhone got introduced. And we see the adoption rate of the iPhone in the enterprise sector or the business world. And that clearly shows that in the end, we can really boil it down to people want simple and easy to use software. And that's kind of the balance that we try to find.
Try to introduce that into the workplace. And it sounds like you guys, you know, a lot of people use use Wunderlist at home, and then they bring it into their organization and introduce it as a good solution for their work life as well.
Yeah, I think one of the great things that we see is that people really adopt Wunderlist quickly for everything they have to do at home, from grocery list with their partners to house renovation to even movie list or vacation planning. And I think what they find is, and that is even what brought me to Wunderlist in the very early days, is, well, this is really fun. And I don't have too much work, and I actually stick to it for longer than just 2 weeks. And it helps me to remember things and to get them done. So in the end, when people see that, then they want to use that everywhere. And why wouldn't they? And right. So usually we infect one person, and that person brings it to a few colleagues. And from there, they share lists and they start managing their projects in a very simple and quick way. And then the company representative calls us and say, hey, I would like to purchase a company license.
So do you guys have any sales that you do directly to companies, or do you 100% rely on free or personal users bringing it to the company themselves?
What we do, though, is what we see is we have a Wunderlist for business team. Those guys are product experts that really look into the user behavior in companies. They do a lot of demos. They talk to a lot of customers. And what people sometimes do is they write us emails and say, hey, I love Wunderlist and I want to use it with my team. Is there someone that I can speak to? Who can explain to me how I can do this? Not only from how do I just purchase a license, but what are the benefits and how do I implement it in the right way in my company? And that's where we also see a lot of people in the end purchasing. They just tell those guys, hey, this is really great. So can I now have 50 licenses? And that's perfect. The majority, though, really happens from like natural progression and natural conversion from free to pro or business usage.
Interesting.
That's awesome.
And have you guys worked on that flow then to get a user to transition? And now they have all these new features. Have you worked on that flow for upgrading inside of the app?
Yes, we have actually experimented with various approaches. Right now, we are at a point where we are actively working on making Wunderlist a lot better for teams, and there's a lot of cool stuff coming very soon. When it comes to the upgrading, we tried very pushy approaches where whenever you reached a feature that was not free, you would get presented with a pop-up. Mm-hmm. But what we find is that the majority of people, they are happy with Wunderlist free. And that's great. Why would we bother them? Even if they accidentally hit a button or something, a feature that they can't use or don't even want to use. We are now at a point where upgrading is super simple. You go to your settings and you can just upgrade to pro either through the app stores or you go on the website and you can become a pro and get a monthly or yearly subscription. In the end, in the app itself, you rarely run into barriers. We send you some emails where we tell you about the incredible features of Pro. We have some promos where, for example, we did a productivity pack together with Dropbox and Pocket and LastPass and even the New York Times some months ago where we tell people about Pro and they can try Pro for free. But we try to balance the user experience with the marketing side of things that we naturally need to have.
Interesting. So where do you find kind of your design inspiration for a lot of this for you know, your everyday, you know, software design?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that I sadly don't get the chance to speak about that often. There are several things. One thing is simply the biggest experience currently that we are competing with is not software. It's actually pen and paper. Huh. So a lot of people still write down their to-dos on paper with a pen. So when we design new features or improve features for Wunderlist, we always look at that experience. And when you saw the latest updates with our quick add on the mobile, we really try to make the capturing as quickly as possible so that we kind of get the immediacy of pen and paper and kind of the lightfulness of pen and paper, but then we combine it with things like natural language detection. So you can actually add a reminder by just typing buy milk tomorrow at 6 p.m. And then you get reminded. So there we add kind of the power of the software. That's
interesting.
That's one big inspiration for us. The second inspiration, I would say, is really our own usage, the usage of our users. And that's, again, less the visual design part. I'll come to that in a second. Mm-hmm. It's more about interactions and features and where can we make reminders better. Like I said before, it's an important point for people. And what do people seek there? And automatically, we suddenly understand, okay, well, people also want to not only have a due date that kind of is an all-day event, they want to be more specific, and reminders should be relative. We have to get these things into the UI. And so in the end, we then come to the UI. And there, we look at all, like a lot of places. One is obviously the platform paradigms and the platform UI principles. But then again, we also put a lot of emphasis on creating a cross-platform experience. So naturally, you look around in the industry from Tribble to Pattern to whatever great software comes out to understand, is this a new paradigm? Is this just nice to look at? But we really try to always reason from a lot of the core first principles of typography and graphic design. Our team looks a lot at just classical graphic design and illustration work, and then tries to put it all together and kind of evolve the Wunderlist design forward. Because one thing that we see is really that when a product is 4 years old, you also build up legacy in a positive way. So you also want to keep the character of the product and evolve it. So it's really a mix of all of those things.
Yeah, how that's interesting. You mentioned kind of using classic design principles, and yet we're in kind of a world where you know, people are kind of turned off by college sometimes. People are getting jobs being self-taught. Where do you stand on kind of the learning the fundamentals, and how important is that to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. Simply because the majority of my design team are actually self-taught.
Okay.
At the same time, I have a very strong opinion when it comes to knowing your craft. As designers, we are much more craftsmen than we are artists. And so understanding and knowing the principles all the way from typography, basic color psychology, shapes, just hierarchy and order, I feel it's extremely important to know that and apply it in your daily work, because in the end, that's what makes it great. You can make something that's pretty, but it doesn't mean it's functioning well, or just you can take pride in the way it is made. It's solid, you know, like a solid foundation for a nice and beautiful house. So when it comes to the question self-taught versus art college, if you want, I think it doesn't matter. I personally believe that a lot of the art college education that we see that goes beyond the basics is outdated. Learning the basics there can be useful. But we have a designer that I hired right from high school. He was 17, and he had an incredible sense for design. And we spent quite some time together and invested as a company in his education, if you want. And he turns out to be an incredible asset for us. So I think the lines there, or the importance of classic education, it's not important anymore. It's more about, do you know everything you need to know to be successful in your career as a designer?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it sounds like kind of the internship is coming back in a very important way, where it used to be just making coffee. You know, you took him under your wing and kind of, you know, molded him as a designer, and it sounds like that may be more of what's needed in these creative fields.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to do that. I think I really believe a lot more companies should do that for various reasons. My point there is, and that's very important, is really that when you hire someone to start very young as an intern or as a very junior person, you have a responsibility to make them great. And it's not just to hire someone who is cheap or has a low salary and does the shitty work. The way we hire here is really with the goal that person becomes a full-time employee after the internship ended, or we want to make that person really good in their job so that after a short amount of time, they can really succeed in their career. And that's just a personal belief of mine, but I think it's really important when we talk about internships or the internship coming back.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's very important, and it's in such an exciting time. So it's always interesting to hear how like you guys are approaching it and how you deal with it. Are you self-taught yourself, or did you attend like a art college?
I went to art college, but through my entire art college, my years in art college, actually, I was working. So I always had kind of the dual experience. And before I went to art college, right after high school, I did a 2-year apprenticeship, which was paid and I learned to graft. I had the chance to learn from a typographer and lithographer. Oh, so wow. I actually, when I started, I set ads, if you want, advertising in film, like really the actual film. And I had the chance to do some letter pressing and typesetting and understand why the curves in Photoshop are so important when you do retouching and stuff right. like that. And that actually shaped my core understanding of us as designers being craftsmen more than artists. Yeah.
That's really cool. That's an incredible opportunity. Wow. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this with us. Where can we keep up with you and where can we get Wunderlist?
So thank you very much first. It was great. You have asked me a lot of great questions that usually no one asks me, and that's amazing.
Thank you.
And you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is @BLeonard. I hope you can find that somewhere on the website.
We'll link,
You can read my blog post in my blog, which is www.benedict-leonard.de or .com, whatever you prefer.
Very cool. And for Wunderlist, it's in the App Store, right?
You can find Wunderlist in all the App Stores across the world, in China, in Japan, in America. You can download it from our website, wunderlist.com. And yeah, I think that's it. It's free.
Awesome. Yeah. And it's a fantastic product.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks, Ben. This was great.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And make sure to check out our app discount section, where we feature discounts from amazing companies like Treehouse, Wistia, Woo Themes, all giving you exclusive discounts for being a Rocket Ship listener. So go to rocketship.fm/essentials.
I just need to find my home.